Oh, hey, I'm Coco, and welcome to our talk show, Single and Too Tired to Mingle. We'll be talking about relationships with ourselves, our exes, our kids, and other important beings. So stay tuned. Oh, hi, Naveen.
Hi, Coco. I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so thank you for coming.
It's great to be here.
Yeah. So you are a successful businesswoman, and you're also the founder of the first app for single parents.
Correct.
Amazing.
For dating app.
Yeah. So how did that come about?
Well, I'm a single parent myself. Okay. I became a single parent in 2016. Mm-hmm. And living in a city like London, it's extremely difficult to meet anyone or have a social life when you're a single mom without any support. So I'm originally from Egypt. I'm not originally from here. So I don't have any family support or people around to dump the kids with. I've got one boy. He's almost 11 now. But at the time when I got divorced, I had to rely a lot on childcare, and I still do, to be able to see my friends or go to the gym or have any kind of time to myself. So dating for me was really kind of not a top priority. I had quite a difficult breakup with my ex-husband, and I just was not, there was too much trauma there for me to really dive into dating again. But all my friends kept pushing and pushing and saying, oh, you've got to get back into dating, download the apps. And I did at some point, but then I just found that the experience was really grim and miserable because I have to sort childcare. So it's also expensive to go on a date as a single parent, right? So you've got to pay for childcare. You probably, in this country, men aren't always so generous on dates. So you end up having to like split the bill, right? So it becomes an expensive endeavor. And then most of the time I found myself being ghosted by men when they find out that I'm a parent and there's an ex-partner. They think it's too messy or too complicated, which I get. If someone's not a parent, it's really hard to take on someone who has kids unless you're really serious and you know, ready to be in a committed relationship. But I find with these kind of mainstream dating apps, it's all pretty casual, and I think non-parents don't really get what it means to be a parent, and they kind of think, oh, too much baggage, as they call it. So I took matters into my own hands, and during lockdown, when COVID hit, I had a previous business which was quite successful. I had a marketing agency, mainly working with tourism and travel clients. We were organizing lots of events and stuff, and obviously once we were in lockdown, no one was traveling and there were no events. So my business went bust overnight. I lost all my clients, and I just took the time of lockdown to create Playdate, which is the UK's first dating app for single parents, just because there was nothing out there for single parents.
Right. Okay. So interesting. I love that you said that a lot of times when people find out that you have a child, they kind of don't invite you on that next date. Do you find that it's different if a woman has a child than a man has a child? Like if it's a single dad or like versus a single mom?
I think that's a very good question, because I have a lot of my single girlfriends who would actually prefer to be with someone who is a parent, because it adds that kind of level of responsibility to them. Like, it just makes them a bit more mature, but also they wouldn't, I know it's a stereotype or maybe a generic statement to say, but they wouldn't really screw them over as much as men who aren't parents, because they have that kind of care and responsibility over another human being. So they feel like he'd be more nurturing or caring. But that's a generic thing. But yeah, I think it is quite different for single men and single, because I think women are probably more likely to be okay with a single dad than a man, non-parent, being okay with a single mom.
Okay.
Yeah.
Talk us through a little bit about your journey and how you became a single parent.
Right. So as I mentioned, I'm originally from Egypt. So I was married to another Egyptian man. We met in Egypt through mutual friends. It was kind of like, I was really young. I was in my early 20s. And that was quite old to get married where I'm from.
Right,
so
okay.
Once you hit mid-20s, that's like you're getting quite old.
The clock is ticking.
Yeah, the clock is ticking. And it's so funny how there's such cultural differences between East and West, because where I'm from, I was like too old. I was getting really old, and no one was going to want me after 28, which is crazy when you think of it now. So we were young, same age. He was in medical school. I thought, oh wow, you know, doctor. It was very, very. All of his friends everyone was in finance or working in real estate, making lots of money, and he was choosing this very noble path. Okay. So yeah, I fell in love. I was young, and then things were fine up until I realized that I was kind of part of a package deal for him. So I used to live in, I was brought up in London, so I went to school in London. So we had the passport. Right. We were expats in the 80s, okay. So we had the British citizenship. And I was always back and forth between Egypt and London.
Right.
And I always wanted to live in London. Like, okay. Every time I'd be in Egypt, I'd be like, really? Yeah. I'd be like, oh, I'm like, any excuse to go back.
Yeah. Be careful what you wish for.
And you know what? Yeah, exactly. And actually, I liked studying, but I wasn't crazy about studying. But right. I convinced my best friend at the time in Egypt,
right.
said, let's go do our master's in London. Oh, cool. Okay. Just to get out again.
Yeah, yeah.
So we did a 1 year, which was it was so much fun. We did 1 year in London to do our master's. She was doing law and I was doing marketing. And I had met my ex-husband right before I left to do my master's.
Right.
And I said, oh, no, I'm off to do my studies. You know, I can't do long distance. And actually, it worked quite fine. But then I went back to Egypt, got married. And ever since then, he's always been wanting to move to London. Right. So he wanted to... medicine in Egypt is really not very good. Education isn't great. Mm-hmm. And also the hospitals and the care is really poor. So he really wanted to study either in the UK or the US. I said, I'm dying to come back to London. So it was London. Things were fine up until we had our son. And I bounced back to work really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I think I stayed home about 5 months.
Okay.
And I love being a mother, but I hated not doing anything with my time. I just found myself to be the worst version of myself, being unproductive and having no purpose but like to be a mom, which is great. But I just needed more out of that. So I went back to work and my business was really flourishing. And I think that's where I started to sense resentment.
Right, so, okay. Despite the fact that he was a doctor.
Yeah, he was doing well.
Okay.
But I feel like there was a bit of resentment of, you're kind of doing it all in a way.
Yeah.
So my career kind of went like this and he was doing well. And I don't know what started to break down the relationship, but there started to be a lot of kind of belittling.
Right. Which wasn't there before?
It wasn't there before.
Okay.
Or maybe it was, but I never really... there was nothing that really bothered him, I think. Now, I think seeing me succeed so much...
Right.
And I think there's a power struggle when it comes to, especially Arab cultural relationships. We come from a culture and tradition... It's very traditional where the man is the caretaker, the man is, the woman is kind of stays home with the kid.
The provider versus the nourisher.
Yeah. But we, in our dynamic, and even from the beginning, I was really the breadwinner from the beginning. And I was fine with that, up until he finishes his degree and, gets on his feet with a good job and then he'll provide. It's a partnership.
Right, yeah.
But I didn't feel that it was a partnership. It started to disintegrate into what I felt, he was, as if we were competing.
Yeah.
And that, for me, was when I just started, my self-esteem and confidence really took a hit because the person you love the most is telling you, you're awful, you can't do this, you can't do that, you look bad, Like, it was constant daily criticism.
Right.
And not the constructive kind. So I think that created... Anyways, that created distance between us. I became very depressed. I thought I couldn't do anything. I couldn't work. I couldn't be a mom. I'm horrible at everything. And 2 years later, so I kind of took that for 2 years.
Right.
And then at some point I said that, that's it.
Okay. So what triggered your change from taking that?
I think it came from him. I later found out that there was another woman.
Okay.
But he initiated the conversation and said, actually, you know what, I think people fall out of love and I think we've come to kind of the end of our relationship. And I was really astonished that he initiated that conversation. Okay. And we decided to take a break, see how we feel. We took a month break from each other, and that was the best month of my life.
Okay.
Literally, I was
That's an interesting sign.
Yeah, I was feeling good about myself. Right. I was at peace. My son was happy. He was, prior to that, having a lot of tantrums and stuff, and he was a very calm, happy child. And I thought, you know what, this is actually really great.
Okay.
And when we tried to reconcile, I said, I think this is a very good decision. I think we've come to the end of it. And that's how things ended.
Okay, quite dramatic.
Yeah.
Okay, it's always interesting to see that actually you're quite happy, but you've lost something because of that, right?
Yeah, and I didn't, and I was petrified because I thought I wouldn't be happy.
Right, yeah.
But I was actually very much at peace.
I found that with a lot of women, actually.
Yeah.
A lot of friends who've gone through the same.
Yeah, you don't know until you actually try to be on your own, and then you realize, oh my God, I've been treated so badly, actually. And yes, this is probably the best decision. And it has been, no regrets.
Okay. So in your experience that you were married for many years and then you kind of started living on your own, your self-esteem kind of blossomed again. What are some of the things that you kind of maybe tolerated in your own view within this relationship that you wouldn't tolerate or deal with anymore? Have you changed in any way?
Oh, how yeah, you I've got a long list of things that I would not tolerate again. And it's really, it's sad because that was for me, that was kind of the only real adult relationship right. I had, mm-hmm. right? And it, for me, that was the benchmark for the longest time before sure. I actually was awoken to the fact that actually this is a horrible, toxic, yeah. narcissistic setup. I always thought, well, you know, that's marriage and that's how men, you know, are and that's how women are treated. And actually, no, we should not be tolerating these things. So, yeah, I definitely would not be with someone who's insecure. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the reasons why men behave this way and belittle women in that way is because they're not secure mm-hmm. or confident in themselves. So they're projecting it. That's mm-hmm. why my therapist said they're projecting it onto you.
Okay.
So it's not there's nothing wrong with you. It's actually mm-hmm. something wrong with them. So I think, and I've met more confident men following my mm-hmm. ex-husband, and I could see that they were, you know, completely supportive and mm. kind, and actually the opposite, you know, women should be put on a pedestal, they should make you feel, you know, seen and respected. Nice. So yeah, I would not tolerate, I would probably not, I would see the red flags of someone if mm-hmm. if he was not secure in himself and confident. And it's not just financially, it's also kind of like you're comfortable in your own skin.
Yeah.
Whereas I think my ex-husband until today is quite kind of not really proud of who he is, okay. you know, not owning who he is, you know, and where he's from and his, like, I think there's something very special about us being different and from different yeah, parts of yeah, the world. Yeah. Like, I love that my son's got, you know, this curly hair that all his friends in school don't have. You know, it was hilarious when he first joined. Like, people would be touching his hair, like, oh, like, so curly. And it's cool. It's nice yeah. to be different. I think that makes you special and unique. It's not something you shouldn't want to try and fit in.
Yeah.
And I think, again, that's why we differ so much. But, yeah, I think that was someone not being secure or comfortable in his own skin. Mm-hmm. That's a red flag. And I would not tolerate, you know, being disrespected mm-hmm. or not being supported, because mm-hmm. I think we live in a day and age where women are fine on their own.
Yeah.
You know, they don't need a man. Mm-hmm. They want.
Is that an issue?
They want a man. And I think that's an issue for all Arab men. Mm-hmm. They want, they
just
need.
Arab?
I don't know. I mean, I haven't tried the other kinds yet, but yeah, I think men need to feel.
Wow, there's an app out there for single parents, believe it or not.
Yeah, there is. Called Playmates. You should download it. But yeah, I think men want to feel needed and mm-hmm. wanted and, you know, damsel in distress, you know, mm-hmm. saving the woman. And we just don't live in that age. Like I'm, mm-hmm. you know, if I'm too much for someone, then I'm too much for someone.
Yeah. What is this too much though? I hear that a lot.
Yeah. Like if I'm too strong or too independent or too successful, you know, whatever it may be, mm-hmm. if that intimidates you, then goodbye.
Yeah.
You know, and I say that now, that's like me post therapy and post coming out the other end. If that was me 10, 15 years ago, I would have never said those things. But now it's like, yeah, we don't need that. And we should be respected and you know, we should be treated equally. Mm. And you don't get that in lots of these kind of narcissistic personalities.
So whilst it's true that kind of, let's say, men maybe do that to women, kind of put them down or maybe because they're not secure, do you think it works the other way around as well?
I'm not like that myself, so I can't speak for myself. But I haven't seen women doing that. I don't think women do that to men. Mm. I mean, not from the circle of women that I know. I don't know what your experience has been, but I don't think women do that to men. I think men need to, they do it to validate their power mm-hmm. and to validate that, you know, yeah, I'm, you know, I'm strong, I'm powerful, they're macho yeah. side of them. But I don't really think that's something women do. Women do other things, but I don't think that's one of them.
What do women do?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've seen lots, you know, there's women can be, I'm not saying all men are horrible or all women are horrible, mm. but yeah, women are capable of, women are smarter than men, let's face it. Mm-hmm. I think intelligence, we can use that to our advantage. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, whether it's manipulation or not even manipulation, but just getting what we want mm-hmm. out of men, I think I see a lot of women doing that. I wasn't very good at that. Mm-hmm. I'm not very good at that myself, but I know that that's something a lot of women are quite good at. They use their intelligence to get what they want okay. from men, which I think is, you know, hats off to them. So they get what they want.
So
I wouldn't be single if that was the case, right?
Yeah, 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 yeah. No, we're just talking with a previous guest that, yeah, it gets harder to date as you get older. Have you found that?
Oh, yeah.
So in your culture, dating is not really a thing, right?
So dating apps is not a thing. So dating is kind of a thing, but it's not, we're not as strict as other kind of Arab Muslim countries where you have to have a chaperone on a date. Mm-hmm. Like some cultures, that's the case. We still have arranged marriages, mm-hmm. which is actually quite common in Egypt as well as lots of these kind of this part of the world. But yeah, dating as such, it's more of, you know, social gatherings in groups. Mm-hmm. And then maybe exchange numbers, but mm-hmm. it's a very conservative approach. It's not direct approach. Okay. You might find, you know, a friend through a friend. Right. Oh, so and so likes you. He's asked for your number. Are you okay with that? But there's no kind of direct approach. Although now they say, I mean, I haven't been there for 12 years now, but they do say that there are the Tinders and the Bumbles. Okay. But it's quite also dangerous because in Egypt, there's such a big. It's a very classist society, and the gap between the rich, I don't know if you probably have noticed that, but it's like you either have like super wealthy or super poor. There's no in between. And they don't mix, right?
Right.
But with these dating apps, they do, right?
Interesting, okay.
So there's like lots of stories, and there's lots of like, you know, everyone has which is quite common, everyone has someone that cleans the house, someone that cooks for them, someone that drives their car, they've got drivers. So there's kind of like the kind of the working class staff that are now mingling.
That's quite interesting.
On these dating apps, because there's no class division, right? He's just a man in your area, but he could be, you know, the guy that cleans the dishes in the house next door. And you're, you know, could be the daughter of one of the richest, you know, most powerful men. So it's, I think that's the trouble with dating apps, especially in countries like Egypt, because you can get, you know, there's a mismatch.
Okay. Right, okay. I understand. It's interesting that you kind of mentioned arranged marriages.
Yeah.
So there was a study done, I read this in The Economist years ago, that actually if you look at the longitudinal success rates, that actually arranged marriages have a better outcome.
Yes, I've actually heard that yesterday on a podcast. Oh, no way. Diary of the CEO, I think it was with Paul.
Interesting.
He's this relationship guru.
Right.
And he was saying the same thing, which I found really astonishing.
There was a 10-year study done.
Do you know why?
Yeah, it comes down to the fact that when there's an arranged marriage, they have to figure out how to live with each other and be happy with each other. And they kind of do that. And if they can figure out how to do that, then it's a more conscious relationship and it takes them further. Whereas in our kind of Western relationships, like you fall in love.
Yeah.
And then you don't really deal with, you know, the admin stuff of the relationship. You kind of leave it too late. And then problems accumulate and maybe you realize that you're not good for each other. Mm. And it kind of drops. But what I've also found kind of within maybe my circle, and I've read about this a lot, it's a mindset predominantly of women, that the marriage is the end of something. Like all women, I've never heard this from a man, but women want to be married.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's like the ultimate goal.
Yeah, that's the goal.
Yeah.
And so, it's always been my dream to have this wedding gown. Yeah. It's always been my dream to get married. Like for me, I've never thought of that. Like how is that even a goal in life?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then when this happens, it's like, okay, I've reached my goal in life. Yeah, okay, but you've got 50 years to go. What are you going to do in those 50 years? So I think the problem is that I think you need to take marriage as a beginning and then you have a story. It cannot be the end because you have a long way to go if that's the end.
True.
So I think it comes to that. That comes down to that.
That's an interesting. So this podcast was saying actually the reason why they're so successful is because you often, the person that's, if you're in love and you're choosing someone, we usually make the wrong decision.
Yeah, correct.
The choice.
Yeah.
But with arranged marriages, it's your loved ones, mm-hmm. people that love you the most, mm-hmm. your family members, your close friends.
Yeah, so they know you, right?
So they know you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then they know what would be good for you. Mm-hmm. So they actually collectively come together to choose like a perfect match for you that you might not agree with initially. Mm. But there's a conscious, like you said, there's a conscious decision making. And it's not just purely us being emotional and falling for the wrong people. Because actually, I mean, I've been told that I, you know, pick the wrong kind of man.
Right.
I think arranged marriages is not something that I would be open to. But I understand.
I think it's quite interesting, actually. Yeah. Maybe not marriage. Yeah. I've never been married. I'm not.
But then.
That's not my goal.
But then in the modern sense, it's basically matchmaking. Yeah, I mean, it's just instead of having your parents or family matchmake you, you have a, you know, it's an app that's matchmaking you, but they don't have your best interest at heart.
The app, it's like you choosing again, right? Yeah. It's not someone it's knowing true. You and thinking, oh, actually, that might be a good match for you.
Yeah,
interesting. So, yeah, it's interesting. So, being an owner of a dating app, do you have any behind the scenes data? What are you seeing any trends? Do you get any feedback? What happens? Any info that would be interesting?
Yeah, so single parents, I mean, you're single parents as well, so correct, you understand that we don't have much time on our hands.
True.
And we're usually don't have much time for dating, and it's a longer period if we are to consider dating. So in selecting, in actually the dating process, it's not a one night stand. This is not play date is not about casual hookups, right? So it's for meaningful relationships. Mm-hmm. So we found that the time a person stays on the app is a lot longer than we anticipated. So usually with these dating apps, you're on for maybe you use it every day for a couple of weeks, and then you get sick of it, or you move on, or you move off the app.
Mm-hmm.
But we found that with play date, users are usually on it for about 8 to 10 months at a time.
Okay.
And they, you know, the activity is like maybe once every 2 weeks. But that's for us active, because single parents are busy. So it's kind of looking at your lifestyle and when you've got time to actually date. The interesting data that I've seen is the ages. So we've got a lot of really young, and this kind of not scared me, but worried me a little bit, that there's a lot of young women, especially like early 20, as young as 20 or 21, with 3 kids and single parents at such a young age. And it's such a wide range. So we've got everyone from 20, 21 up until 55 years of age on the app, that are using the app. We have users all over the country as well. So I thought it would be predominantly London, but it's actually people all over, which is great. We've had a few success stories, which is really nice. However, they, you know, wish to be anonymous and not to share. But yeah, we've had a couple of success stories, which was nice to see. But generally, I think people really have the feedback we've gotten so far is that they're really enjoying the shared experience with someone. So, for example, we have a lot of widows on the app, and they often match with other widows because they just have they're both grieving or they're both getting over a loved one. So they can, you know, be more comfortable speaking with someone who has that shared experience. So we find that that's been quite compelling to kind of actually select based on your type of single parent status.
Interesting.
But otherwise, I think it's going well. I think people are in it for, it's a very wholesome app. You see lots of people quite comfortable to put up pictures with their kids, which I wasn't expecting either. And it's kind of like really celebrating being parents, whereas with the other dating apps, you know, you're worried. You think twice about, do I say I'm a mom or not? And it's just narrowing the pool, right? So we're basically narrowing the pool of people in the same shoes as you. You don't need to explain yourself.
Yeah.
And actually, it's your greatest asset having children. It's not baggage anymore. Yeah. This is where, you know, having a child is actually a good thing.
Because I guess if you would be bothered by dating, let's say, a single mother, you come on the app when you know that you're not bothered by that.
Exactly.
Right?
So exactly.
Like a different mindset.
Exactly. And same for women as well.
Yeah.
They know that, you know, Playdate is only single dads, but if that's what they're after, then that's what they'll find. And the same for like women, that there's lots of women that can't have children.
Right.
But they would love to be parents, or they're very good with kids.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's because when we first launched, we said, okay, only single parents. You have to be a single parent.
Yeah.
But then I thought, well, there's such a large, I mean, including people I know and close friends of mine that are desperate to be mothers, but they just can't for either financial reasons or for medical reasons.
Right.
But they'd love to have to adopt children. Right. So if they're with a single dad, then they can kind of inherit those kids.
Okay.
So we've opened it up a bit to even non-single parents, but you know you're in it because you know you're on Playdate because you want to be with a single dad or single mom.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So have you found anyone on the app that was interesting for you?
Conflict of interest. There's conflict of interest. That's purely professional.
Do you get the first choice?
Well, I mean, I won't lie to you. I do have a profile on the app.
Oh, do you?
I do. And I often like, just for research, make sure everything's going well on the app. So I have a little skim. But no, it's not really on my, I'm not in that kind of headspace right now. And I'm just focusing on the business. But yeah, it's great to see lovely, you know, men from all over the country that are really putting themselves out. And it's really hard to put yourself out there. Even people think that it's easier for men, but it's not, because you become a single parent for a reason. Right. And usually that reason isn't a positive experience, right? So no one, I mean, I never wanted to be, I didn't go into marriage and having children thinking I want to be divorced one day. Like you don't wish for that, obviously. But things happen, right? And I think single parents, unless they're solo parents, which is actually on the rise in the UK, we'll talk about that in a minute, but single parents become single parents either because they've been, you know, betrayed or cheated on, or a relationship has gone bad. There's some kind of trauma attached to you becoming a single parent. And that journey is always difficult. And even as a widower, you know, you lose a loved one. Sure. You're still in love with that person, but you've lost someone. That's a lot of trauma. Plus, you have to put on the brave face and smile because you've got children.
Yeah.
So it's like, how? I mean, I think parents are really superheroes to be able to put on, until today, like when we're going through the worst possible time in our lives, we have to smile and get up and be parents to our children. So it's, I think people underestimate what single parents have to go through to actually get themselves back on their feet and also put themselves out there on a dating app again.
Sure.
Like, I've been through all this, you know, horrible time, and now, okay, I'm ready to find love again. That's making yourself really vulnerable, and I think there's a lot, but it's really sweet to see that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just very endearing. I think it's lovely to see single mums and dads put themselves out there again and giving love another go, because life doesn't end at, you know, divorce or separation.
You've got a long way to go.
Got a long way to go. And just because one relationship has gone really badly doesn't mean, you know, there aren't great people out there that want the same things as you. So, yeah, I have an optimistic view on life.
Okay, that's good.
Although I haven't been through the best experiences. But, yeah, but now it's like, it's hilarious, because I remember when I went into another relationship following my divorce, I was not used to, for example, a man opening the door for me. It's like, oh, okay. Or helping me carry my luggage at the airport. Okay. You know, things like that. Because I've been on my own for so long. I do everything myself. I was almost kind of offended by, like, what do you mean? I can carry my own bags. You know, they're like, relax. You know, so I'm just being gentlemanly. I'm here. I can help you, you know. And it's, I always have to, like, okay, take a breath and say, okay, you need to relax. You know, not all men are like that.
Let yourself be treated.
And there's nothing wrong with that. But I find that till today, I get very defensive if someone offers to help me do something when I've been doing it myself for so long. But actually,
why do you think that triggers you? Does it, like, trigger something inside you?
I think it triggers, like, well, you know, as if it's like, well, oh, you're a woman, so you obviously, like, need help. You know, I just get a bit defensive. I know that's not the case, but I often feel like, oh, you know, let me help you with that. Why would you need to help me with that? I can do it myself. I don't know. I need to go back to therapy.
It's definitely not just you. I think it's a common trait nowadays, I think, with this women's lib, which is fine.
Yeah.
But the fact that we want to do everything on our own now, it almost feels like men have lost their place a little bit.
Yeah.
And maybe men don't know what to do anymore because if someone wants to help us or do something for us, we're offended. Yeah. And now, so what is their role ultimately?
So. I mean, for example, things like with things around the house, like I never used to be able to change a light bulb or do anything like with electronics or things. Now I just like look up on YouTube how to fix things and I'm there doing it. Yeah, it's going to take me longer than if I had a man in the house to help me or someone to help me. But you just do it because there's no one else.
There's no other choice. Yeah.
And in a way it's empowering because it's like I can do anything on my own. Like it's fine.
I quite like that. It's like, okay, fine, I can do everything, but It's not all the time. Yeah. It's like, oh, that's nice. You've done something. Like, we can come back to the four love languages, actually. Like, what is your love language?
Exactly.
Right? So for me, it's also...
What is your love language? Acts of service.
Acts of service, definitely. Also time. I think time spent
Is that
together.
One of them? Oh, yeah. Quality time.
I'm big on that. Yeah. Like, if we're spending time...
Correct.
What's the point?
Yeah.
Acts of service.
All of them, really.
I don't mind the materialistic stuff. Yeah. Like, buying gifts. I'm like, whatever, that's not a thing.
I think I'm physical touch.
Physical touch as well. Oh.
I think
like,
that's me.
I'm like a cat. It's like,
let's
just hang out.
I think it's also culture. Like, we hug culturally.
That's true, actually.
We're very, touchy We touch everyone and hug everyone and kiss everyone. And,
Like a cat. Yeah, let's just stroke each other and purr each other. Just purr.
Just snuggle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Do you have all of them or do you have a specific, or is it like physical touch?
Physical touch. I think that's for me, but also acts of service, I think, would be my number two, but mainly physical touch. Like, I can even see that with my son. Like, I'm very, that's what I like. That's my love language with him.
Okay. Yeah. I think we need to do a show about love languages, actually.
Yeah,
I think
it's so that's a great idea.
I think me and my ex had mismatched love languages. I think that was like a massive issue.
Yeah.
I would be saying something and he's just like, didn't compute and he was something else. And I'm like, oh, that to me doesn't matter.
Have you identified what his love language is? Actually, I don't know what my ex's love language is.
So I think it definitely wasn't spending quality time together because he's quite happy to do stuff on his own and in his head as well.
Yeah.
It's just a character that he is. But for me, that's so important.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And even if you know it, I think it's quite hard to go outside of your kind of comfort zone and what you need.
Mm.
I think you have to be quite switched on for that.
True.
So it's nicer if it's kind of like automatic.
Yeah. And then there's attachment styles as well.
Oh, that's there's attachment.
We need like four more episodes.
Maybe yeah. Attachment styles.
Should do one on love language and one on attachment styles.
That's it, yeah. Styles. We'll do. Tick for that, yeah, definitely.
That'd be fun.
Oh, my God. So, Naveen, obviously, you're beautiful.
Oh.
You're successful at what you do. You have, you know, you have a child. You've created this family. And when you were saying about being in a relationship where kind of you were on maternity leave, but you were working and your work was being kind of, you know, more and more growing and being successful. Why do we, as women probably, even if we're successful, we've done a lot of things in life, tend to believe others when they tell us that we're not good or not good enough?
That's a good question. I think because women have not historically been expected to be successful in certain areas of life, I think there was that kind of lack of expectation. I feel like on some level we feel like we need to prove ourselves even harder. Like it's expected of men to be in the workplace. Mm-hmm. It's expected of men to be making money mm-hmm. for a household.
Yeah.
But it's not the expectation that women do the same. Mm-hmm. And I feel like because women always have that, and even in a workplace environment, when you go for a job interview or when you're starting out a job, they always ask you like, oh, you know, are you planning on having kids soon? They think about the maternity leave. They think, and they always look at women, and even if they say they don't these days, mm-hmm. 100% women are looked at as, it's going to take a very long time to have equal pay and like gender equality and all of that, because I think employers and men look at women as, oh, you know, she's got the baby brain, or, oh yeah, she's going to have to go home early.
Baby brain, I've not heard of that before.
You haven't heard of baby brain? So when you're pregnant, basically, brain isn't 100%.
It does go down cognitively.
It does. Yeah. And I mean, I was the same, and your memory it's and everything.
Proven,
and we get hormonal, and we PMS, and we go through periods. And like, we've got so much emotional fluctuation.
It's a different biological system.
It's a different biological system, but it doesn't mean that we're... But I think on some subconscious level, that's why we feel that we're not good enough at doing other things.
Okay.
So when we're told that, when we're told we're not good enough at something, I think that gets to us. It's we better. Almost believe it.
Yeah, right.
So we have to work extra hard to prove that we are good enough, twice as hard as men. And I see that even with my business, when I'm fundraising, trying to raise money for the business, or I'm going into a meeting with a group of men and white men in suits, you know, they ask you different questions than they would ask a man. Mm-hmm. You know, they look at you differently just because of the fact that you're a female.
Mm-hmm.
So I think being told not good enough, we have to work extra hard. And we do on some level believe that we're not, because I think men always think they're so good at everything. You know, they make a victory out of like the smallest thing.
That is true.
You know, like they score a ball into a goal and they're like, oh, did you see my goal? It was amazing. And they boast about it and they can talk about it for hours. Women, we don't celebrate ourselves enough. And I do the same. Like, I may have achieved some amazing things, but I don't see them as amazing achievements and I don't talk about them all the time.
So maybe we should do that more, right?
Yeah.
I think it's up to us actually to celebrate our small little successes.
But we don't, right? Because we're hard. We feel like we could do more and we should do more to keep up with the patriarchy.
Yeah,
you know?
But I think we need to pause and celebrate the small little successes.
For sure.
So I have my best friend, whenever I kind of do something, she goes like, have you celebrated that success? And I'm like, good point.
Yeah.
A glass of champagne, for example, just to do something or invite someone out.
Because you always
feel
like
a difference.
It's true.
Otherwise, you're just rolling yourself forward.
Right. When are we celebrating, Coco?
We're celebrating this interview.
Yeah.
And the first, that's the third interview that we've had.
Yeah.
So we're going to go out and celebrate it.
Amazing.
Because, so what would be like maybe a positive takeaway for our audience today?
On what?
On dating or... not to put up with, perhaps, and how to love yourself a little bit.
I think
more than
we need to,
sometimes.
And I'm going to say this to myself as advice as well. I think we need to go easier on ourselves and not put too much pressure on ourselves.
Yeah,
life is too short to sit and worry about mundane stuff when there's like bigger things going on in the world. I think we need to go out there and put ourselves out there if you want love in your life. Mm-hmm. I think you have to put yourself out there and put it out there that you put it out there in the universe that you want the love.
Okay.
And then it will come to you. I just think sitting at home sulking about how miserable you are, how being single is making you miserable, I think owning your situation, but also just putting yourself out there. It's not going to come to you. You've got to go out and get it as well. It's not, I think we all want that romantic kind of chance encounter, which can happen, but it won't happen if you're stuck at home, you know, worried or scared that, you know, what people are going to say or how will people take me. Like, I've been through so much that my confidence was knocked down like you would never believe. But you have to be, I think the magic happens when you're vulnerable and when you put yourself out there and open yourself up. We're all broken in some way, right? No one is, everyone you see, despite what social media tells us or what the internet tells us, I think we're all in some ways broken. And so,
when you say broken, what do you mean by that?
We've all been through some hardships. I don't think anyone's gone through life scot-free. I think, you know, we've all had, whether it's through childhood or through relationships or through work or friendships, I think we all have something inside us that's slightly broken,
okay,
like in on different levels.
Yeah.
So I just feel like let's not be so hard on ourselves. And if people can't accept us the way we are, then they're not meant to be in our lives. So yeah, don't go easy on yourself and put yourself out there.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Naveen.
Thank
was amazing.
You for having
so interesting.
Me. I had so much fun.